May God go with us all as we walk this Lenten road together. At the end of last week's parable story, the one about the fig tree, we have a gardener kneeling before a tree, digging around with fertilizer and water, with care and compassion and concern. But we don't know how that story really ends. We don't know that if in the next year there were all kinds of figs or not. What we do know is that the gardener doesn't give up and is spending time and effort to make that growth possible. Last week, I said that vineyard owner, that orchard owner could be seen as the devil, the world, and our sinful selves, the ones going around condemning, saying this one needs to be chopped down. And that it was the gardener who represented the presence of God in our lives. Jesus is letting us know that the presence of God is with us in grace and forgiveness, working to help us grow and bear fruit. And this is good news. Today, we have a story that begins with the Pharisees and the scribes grumbling behind their hands to each other, complaining that Jesus is spending way too much time with tax collectors and sinners. Now, maybe those Pharisees and scribes wanted to spend some time with Jesus too. It's just that these tax collectors and sinners made them really uncomfortable. After all, they were known sinners. They had cheated and stolen from people. They lived scandalous lives of wanton ill repute. And a good Pharisee couldn't spend time with that sort, couldn't even really be seen with that sort. So they were complaining. Jesus heard the complaining. And Jesus told them stories of radical forgiveness. It started with the story about a lost sheep and then a story about a lost coin. Jesus was trying to show us that there are times when we are, all of us, lost. Whether as a known sinner or a Pharisee, whether as a pastor or an addict or anyone else, we are all lost at times. And Jesus in the story was showing us and wanting us to know that God searches for us. God seeks us out, and God does not give up ever. And when the lost is found, there is joy in heaven, great joy. And God's love is shown to us both in the search and in the forgiveness for all of us. These stories come later on in Luke's gospel after the fig tree story, but Jesus is continuing teaching those thoughts that he began sharing in that fig tree story. God is not about chopping down or leaving us lost. God is ready and willing to roll up his sleeves and to work to bring us back. That's what Jesus' life and ministry shows us vividly. But these Pharisees and scribes, as well as folks like you and me, we still need more convincing. Doesn't it just make more sense to let go of those who don't seem to want to follow the rules? Couldn't we accomplish more if we spent less time on cleaning and searching? Isn't it better to just chop it all down? Jesus still says no, and God's love still shows us no. So we get the parable we heard in the gospel reading today. Many of us know it as the parable of the prodigal son. Some now call it the parable of the loving father. Others know of it as a father and his sons. But what this story does is present us with kind of a worst case scenario and asks us to ponder the outcome shown. The story begins as a younger son decides that his life would be way better if his father was dead. So he asks if his father would at least pretend to be dead and give him his inheritance. Now you have to understand that father is heartbroken. To have his son say, you know, I really wish that you were already dead, breaks your heart. And yet that father still loves his son and he does what is asked. This father was willing to die in the eyes of his son out of love. And that younger son then runs off to a country far, far away and squanders his property in dissolute living. This younger son did exactly what the Pharisees were saying the tax collectors and sinners were doing. He ran around drinking and all kinds of fast living. But then worse, when the money ran out, there was a famine. Any new friends he had found dropped him like a hot potato, and he was left alone, abandoned, scared, penniless, and without hope. Eventually, he finds work at a pig farm, which for a Jewish boy would have shown how far he had fallen. And he was eyeing the pig food with a little relish. This is a worst case if the Pharisees had ever seen one. A sinner who ran off, lived fast, crashed and burned. There is no fruit there. And if ever a tree deserved to be cut down, if ever a sheep deserved to be left behind lost, here was one for sure. And yet Jesus' story doesn't turn that way. Because this younger son realizes his mistake and realizes that even life as a servant at his father's house would be better than what he had right there. He knows that he would barely deserve even consideration for something like that, but he knows that his father is a good man, and so he heads home with hope. He's repentant. He knows he's been foolish. He knows he's on his absolute last chance, but he has hope. Now, the Pharisees would definitely approve of the groveling stance that was adopted here by the son, but they would have held out very little hope for him to get anything from that father. They were definitely not expecting what comes next in the story. The father, looking out, maybe he spent time looking out every day trying to see if his son would come home, and he saw his son, and he ran to him. Now, gentlemen of a certain sort of stature and position or of a certain age don't run. It's just not what's done. He ran. He ran. He sweeps his son into his arms and showers him with tears and kisses. Before the son can get his grovel on at all, the father calls for servants to ready a bath, to find clothes and shoes, jewelry, and get a feast started. For the father, it's not time to hear groveling because he was filled with too much joy. His lost son was found. His dead son was alive. I don't know about you, but I can almost see the shock on the Pharisee's face. Could that kind of radical forgiveness be possible? Was that forgiveness for anyone? Is it possible that it was for all of those sinners they'd been complaining about? Is it possible for them and for us? You see, the jury were still, the Pharisees were still upset, and they couldn't really understand where the father's joy came from. And this is where the older brother comes into the story. Because in the middle of the celebration, the older brother comes home, hears the music, and wonders what's happening. A servant tells him that his brother has returned and that his father is having a party to celebrate that return. And that enrages his brother. He refuses to go into the party. He sits outside, fuming in all his righteous indignation. This is a pose the Pharisees understand. It's also a pose that I have adopted many, many times in my life. You see, I can be like a Pharisee, but I am also an older brother. I have sat in judgment over my younger brother, Phil, more times than I wish to recall. I've sat there waiting with bated breath and much anticipation to see him cut down or left lost. One time that vividly springs to my mind, Phil was young. He was 4 or 5, which made me 7 or 8. And we at the time were living in the house, and we had a long backyard. There were fields behind it, all kinds of things. And we couldn't find Phil. He wasn't anywhere in the house. He wasn't in the front yard. He wasn't in the immediate backyard. We walked. He wasn't in any of the long backyard. No one knew where Phil was, what had happened to him, anything. And I sat in the kitchen just waiting for them to find him so that he could get his comeuppance. You know, come on, I was here, always there, always listening. I was the one who was behaving. And they searched and searched because behind our backyard, there was a cornfield. On the side of the cornfield was the livestock that all the corn was being grown to help feed, including horses. I don't know if you know, but Philip, my brother's name, in Greek translates as lover of horses. And he really did. And so there he was, taking his little 4 or 5 year old body through the corn that was twice as tall as he was. And he went and he was standing over by the fence, watching the horses run. Thank the Lord, I have 5 sisters, and they were able to find him and scoop him up, and they brought him home, and I was ready to watch my mother pounce. She swept him up in her arms and showered him with tears and kisses, and nothing happened to my little brother. Forgiveness came. And it took me a long time to figure out really what happened that day. It actually took my having my own kids to truly understand. Because there is nothing that you won't do for your children. Yes, you stand firm for them, but even in the midst of all of the pain and confusion and all the rest of it, forgiveness comes. That is the point in this story. For the older brother in our story today, the father has such love for him as well as for the younger brother. All I have is yours, the father says. I love you. I care for you. And anything you wish to do is possible. The father says, lost is lost and dead is dead. And your brother came back. And that fills me with joy. Just like your being here fills me with joy. See, this is the message that Jesus is hoping the Pharisees will hear. Already, those tax collectors and sinners were excitedly changing their lives, repenting, returning to God, knowing that radical forgiveness is possible. Jesus hopes that the Pharisees will see the joy in their return, that they will turn off their judginess and step into the celebration of God's love. We just don't know how the story ends. And so this is where we are left to ponder. But as we ponder, we also have help. We know that it is God's radical forgiveness that reconciles us to God. Paul reminds us of that in our reading from 2 Corinthians today, where he says, all of this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ. We are reconciled to God. We have a rebuilt relationship with God. We are beloved children of God because of God and God's love shown in Jesus Christ. Paul goes on to remind us that God does not count our trespasses against us and instead gives to us the ministry of reconciliation, where we love and forgive one another and bring friends and neighbors, strangers and even enemies into a right relationship with God. Sometimes we are lost. Sometimes we are lonely and hopeless and alone. Sometimes we return and there is celebration for us. Sometimes we sit outside in our own goody-goodiness judging others. But we are always welcome into God's celebration. We are always welcome to live that celebration. Jesus teaches us today about God's radical forgiveness. And then Jesus lives his life, suffers, dies, and rises again so that this radical forgiveness is real for us all. So may we go into the world celebrating God's love, welcoming one another and all our neighbors into God's radical forgiveness, because this is good news. Amen.